Well, hello, nature lovers. Welcome to Restoring Our Roots, the voice of the decriminalized nature movement. This podcast is a gathering space where we explore the wisdom of entheogenic plants and fungi, the beauty of natural healing, and the importance of reconnecting to the sacred earth. Every month, we'll hear from visionaries, healers, and advocates who are working to decriminalize entheogenic plants and fungi and return us to a balanced relationship with nature. Tune in, stay rooted, and let's grow together. My name is Larry Norris. I am the co-founder and national organizing director and board member with Mudu here on Decriminalized Nature. I'm really excited to be here. We've had quite an amazing last 5 years, and it's really exciting to bring everyone back here on our new podcast where we explore a little deeper into the board members and the community and just really get some great conversations going. I want to give a big shout out to Rachel for setting this up and being our help with the tech support. So thank you very much, Rachel. And let's begin. We're going to start with expand your consciousness, embrace the mystery, and discover the wisdom of plants and fungi. Today, we're going to be speaking with Mudu Bakke, who's an amazing person I met over a decade ago now in Detroit at the 2014 Detroit Psychedelic Conference. And it's been just such a beauty to watch you grow and myself and everyone in the communities grow and see how big this has become from, you know, what was, really beautiful, intimate connection in 2014. And you just had another really fantastic conference recently. So I'll let you talk about that in a minute, but maybe just go ahead and give yourself a little introduction and then we'll jump into the conversation.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Rachel. I am Mudu Bakke from Detroit, Michigan. Born and raised here, longtime psychonaut representing Decrim National as a board member, which I'm proud and honored to. And like you stated, Larry, we've been knowing each other for over 10 years now, and it's been a beautiful ride. Came up just, you know, a regular city guy. I don't want to say regular because it was very little regular about my upbringing. I had wonderful parents that loved me. In particular, I had a father who was very much rooted in what we call sacred science, and also a mother who was rooted in social justice. So it was a unique blend, and that helped shape my worldview and my approach to the world. So as I grew and developed in the world, living through the 80s and the 90s, Detroit, Michigan, the narrative kind of shapes itself, of course, with loving and supportive parents and a loving, supportive neighborhood. There are still certain effects that occurred that shaped my development, in which I got good and bad lessons. So there were many of my friends who didn't make it this far. And so understanding at a certain point in my life what I had seen and what I witnessed, both good and bad, both the positive exposure and the love I received, and also some of the harsher life lessons that I experienced as I developed and matriculated in the city of Detroit as a young Black male, I found a point in which I was full of pain and needing quest answers. And that's when I began the quest. Now, I was always prided to remain on a quest of a higher understanding, but I was at a point which I was like 17 or 18, and I found myself, and this which links to Per Ankh, the building, the church, the sanctuary. I found myself basically hitting a spiritual rock bottom with my family fell apart, my brother recently murdered, you know, we had poverty, and I had to just decide that there was a different way. And so in that path of searching, I stumbled across Baba Kalindi, who became my martial arts instructor, my friend, my Jagna, my elder. And, you know, outside of my father, he served as a major, major influence in my development. And so he helped me expand my understanding of my traditional culture and African culture and global culture, appreciate it. And in his science, he was a martial artist, a very world-class martial artist. And so I began to train under him. And once we got to a certain point, me inquiring, like, what is the highest level like? You know, because our system isn't a traditional black belt system. it's rooted in like a traditional martial fighting system. And so he advised me that the largest fight was not with a contender outside of me, but with within. You know, it was that pain, it was that frustration, it was that feeling of isolation and rage that needed to be dealt with and utilized, well, dissolved, and from the remnants, utilize those remnants to build something beautiful. And so, of course, it was mystifying to me at first because I'm thinking it's all about kicking and punching. And that's when he began to teach me about the sacred mushroom. And so for about a year or so, I would, like many people have heard already, I would show up at a location and there would be elders, you know, biologists, scientists, astrologists, just in a circle talking. It was like a real Matrix scene. And I didn't know what was going on. He would just have me boil rice. And, you know, I would sit around and just eavesdrop on the discussions and learn so much. And after about a year of him basically walking me through how to do a basic grow tech, he instructed me, you know, to cultivate my own. And once I did that, I experienced the inner depths. And then I began to like share it with my friends and my community. And it just grew from there. And yeah, so that's a little bit about my background upbringing.
Sorry, muted, technical difficulties here on my side. Thank you for sharing that, Muda. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's you know, amazing story. And I'm sure there's so many, as you said, so many lessons during the course of that. A couple of things you mentioned there, I like just want to touch back on before we continue on is you're talking about sort of this intersection of sacred science and social justice with your parents. You know, could you tell us a little bit more about what sacred science is and how did those match up and how did you sort of view that as you kind of came into the world? Because I see that's what you're doing right now too, right? Sacred science and social justice is both kind of coming together. So could you talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah, well, it's based on the fundamental understanding that we are dynamic creatures and that nothing exists in a static or vacuum state in which all things are connected and it's all our behaviors connect with other things and other beings around us. And that was like a fundamental teaching that I was taught in my household. And so regarding my father, he was a high ranking leader in the movement of the Rosicrucianism in our region. And he would instruct me on a lot of divine principles, you know, have me at night, you know, working on my candle gazing, my visualization, my understanding of sacred tones and such, colors and all of that, vibrations. And then at the same time, my mother, you know, educating me to real issues of physical world, issues of limit, lack, injustice. And so together they made sure to engage me in like a dualistic, you know, not a dualistic, but in a curriculum that dealt with not only just the physical realities, but the greater reality. And so understanding that we are agents in our own reality, that was a major thing. And so my mother, she was a organizer for the unions and the workers. Also political activists, had me working at the neighborhood city halls. And then my father, you know, engaging in other civic things as well, because he was a civil rights representative. So yeah, it's just a little snapshot.
Yeah, wonderful. And how you mentioned a lot of things there in terms of things you learned with sacred science, your dad. How many of those do you find have worked their way into your ceremony space? Are you doing some of the same techniques? Are you working with similar ideas?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's helped me to navigate the space and be able to, I think, pull things out of it that's been very beneficial. And so it's helped me. It's helped me understand that the science of how we are co-creators in our reality and how we can tap into states of consciousness, which can change not only our perception, but our behavior in this reality and our experience of it, not only for ourselves, but those around us. So, experience some really profound insights, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, we can chat about that maybe in a bit, but I just want to sort of bring it back to another thing you were talking about, the Purong Church And this is where you had this, you know, beautiful Detroit Psychedelic Conference that happened just this previous weekend or a week and a half ago, about 10 days ago, right? So so that was really amazing to be there. And I just want to kind of rewind it back even to 10 years before in 2014 and kind of speak just how your one of your talks there, I think I've told you this before, right, really inspired, I think, a lot of the work I do and we all do now, and like really seeing how these seeds came through. And you were talking about taking people around in Detroit and looking at weeds and saying, this isn't a weed, this is a medicinal plant, or this is this plant, or like really taking away the sort of quote unquote plant blindness that people see, or like not really realizing like how many medicines are in our environment. And I think that really, like, you know, that was really powerful for me to hear that and really see how you're kind of re-engaging the narrative. So people are looking at these things as just sort of like, we're not going to pay attention to it, but really get people involved and back into relationship with nature. Maybe you can speak a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, my elder, my grandparents, aunties, uncles, they were really good in terms of plant identification. And so coming up, I learned to identify a lot of plants and appreciate them. And so in that regard, you know, and it's funny, in Detroit, you know, it's a lot of vacant lots. There were a lot of vacant lots. There are still. But eventually, you know, they began to resemble just giant pharmacies, you know, because once you can identify the plants, they're not weeds. So yeah, I would take, you know, and we still do, we go on tours like through lots, and we'll just show the abundance of medicine and you know, functional and useful plants that's like right under our feet. So yeah, that's key to, you know, what this is about, you know, the environmental understanding. In that work, you know, we did a lot of work for urban farming, access to foods, you know, D-Town Farm, the People's Food Co-op, in association with that type of work. So yeah, major impact, major part of that connection between like science and social justice, right?
And, you know,
plants.
Detroit is sort of known worldwide now for the urban farming and everything that's going on out there. Everyone kind of points to it, even out here on the West Coast, like, oh, wow, what's going on in Detroit? You know, so I think that's been really a beautiful thing to see, too, because people are like rethinking, how do we engage with the land? How do we engage with our communities? How do we make sure that we don't have to go way out there to get some, you know, fruits and vegetables, but they can be right here for us, you know, locally. And so I think that's really, really also awesome to see, you know. Kind of time, so it's, you know, it's great to see, even though I'm not organized, great to see how it's all been sort of moving forward and evolving, you know.
Yeah, and on another note, I think you had mentioned something which is interesting too, is like even though on that aspect, when we talk about sacred plant medicines, I think you had mentioned our understanding of our local flora and fauna, right? And mm-hmm. and the bioavailability of plants that will help us tap in and ground ourselves more, like right in our backyard, as opposed to, you know, looking thousands of miles away. So that's really important work too. So yeah.
Great, wonderful. Yeah. So that was 2014 conference, beautiful conference. I saw, you know, there's a couple people there at this conference recently, but now it's been 10 years. Could you sort of track along how that process has been? I mean, obviously, Bubba Clindy was there at the beginning, and then kind of as you move forward, you know, you kind of took over with Mamayana. And so maybe speak to the whole process of the Tri-Psychedelic Conference and kind of what kind of things you've seen and the conversations you've been hearing about, and kind of just the gathering of community that happens. Because Detroit event is unique to any other conference I've ever been to. You know, you do some good conversations there that no one's talking about anywhere else. And it just gives you a chance to really like think about things in a new way and shift your perspective or expand your mind. So maybe speak to this process of these many different conferences and kind of who you're bringing in and some of the big conversations you've been hearing and all that.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the benefits, like back in those days, I guess it was still, lack of a better word, underground, you know, for lack of a better word. And I know you've been involved further beyond 14, such as I, so as I. So it was that type of feel, you know, in the beginning where it was just people who are like genuinely rooted in this thing and like willing to do the work to find out. And it was just like such high level conversations that were going on, and people and level of expertise. And through the years, luckily, that's been maintained, as you can see, you know, that's one aspect from 2014 to now. Generally speaking, with the psychedelic conference, it's been growing. Of course, we've been building a lot more community. There are a lot more conferences online now. That's changed definitely on the scene, because before they weren't any conferences that were focused on psychedelics. So there are a lot more now, which helps us network with other regions, which is beautiful, which is great. Helps us to like reconnect. Like I've seen you a couple of times, I think this year, just different conferences, which is sweet. We've maintained a really good core family, which I think is sweet, and a growing core. I think, and for me personally, it's been a big thing because, as you know, me just like basically being an understudy of Kalindi and his transition, it's been a real growth process, you know, in terms of me stepping into leadership and me being comfortable in my own skin, me, you know, being confident in moving forward and a way to move forward. So from now to then, it's been a lot. We've grown, we've organized, you know, Decrim has grown, and our friendships have grown. So it's been a lot of positive growth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it seems like there's sort of unique. Can you sort of speak to some? I think there's like folks from Georgia, folks from Detroit. Like, what are the areas that you see are kind of the hotbeds of this interesting conversations that you're hearing about?
Or that you're bringing up? I mean, you know, at the conference, there were people as far as Spain, Granada. You know, these are places. But of course, here in the States, there's a lot of activity in Ohio. You know, me and you from the Midwest, Ohio has a lot of profound work going on. It's kind of quiet, but I'm sure it's going to come to the surface soon. Atlanta, there's a lot of great organizing work. There's a really sweet network going on. I see a lot of great things going on in Minnesota, Oregon. Oregon is really, you know, that community. Those are like a lot of the communities, Chicago, you know, so it's good hearing the different New York, you know, so there's a lot of communities that's online, and yeah, that's where the hotbeds of discussion going. It's like all over. Thanks to you, Larry. No, I'm joking. I appreciate your organizing, because that part's what gives people confidence that they have a way forward. So if people don't know, Larry is like the background technical guy. He's like he sets the game plan and does a lot to make sure that people have access to this information and making sure they have like really resources to organize their communities. So
yeah, thank you, Mubi. Thank you. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny that, you know, just like you're saying, like there's all these communities that you spoke to and there's this really strong underground network. And in a way, sometimes I'm like, there's some folks who are like, do we, you know, we have such a solid situation here. Do we need to go to do the policy route? You know, but it's like, you know, like you're saying, you know, if we can at least get that, then other people who maybe are afraid to step in or a little concerned or whatever else because of legal ramifications, they can kind of step in fully. But it's so nice to hear, you know, all these places, you know, there's already this like huge organization of folks that are doing work in those cities. So, you know, whether it passes or not, you know, it's just a matter of time. Like you said, you know, we have a bunch of teams in Ohio that have been looking to do some stuff. You know, I've been working on Columbus for a little while and other things, and kind of, I think they're waiting maybe for cannabis. Hopefully we'll see if that, you know, that's done on a state level, maybe they'll jump back into this. But, you know, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Really. Way because
it is
being built, you know, and the people are sharing information and sharing grow techniques and learning and having these inner experiences and all this. So I think that's really
I share in that tug of war sometimes too. It's like, why can't we just keep it informal and organic, you know what I mean? And then outside interferences, and then on the other hand, it's like, let's work and celebrate and benefited from it. We deserve to move with a degree of autonomy and not pressing our lives, you know. So that's the aspect that, you know, it's the real hard work, you know, so that we can make sure people have access and move freely without fear.
Thank you for that. I think that's what's so beautiful about what we've been doing and all, you know, and it's like, you know, it's been well over a decade, but just like so nice to see this idea, like for me at least, pre-breakthrough experience, post-breakthrough experience for me was where it was like the initial paradigm shift of the, oh wow, there's so much more. What to you is a breakthrough experience? Not necessarily about dosage or whatever, but just like, what was the thing, your first breakthrough experience? What does that mean to you? And then also like, what was that like? What was that experience like for you?
Oh man. Oh, so my first breakthrough experience, I realized, I guess what they say is levels to this thing. It was an amazing experience because I guess I flipped from the personal to the interpersonal, I guess tapping into source consciousness. So the first breakthrough I was going through, like, you know, as we do purging, getting rid of a lot of the pain and frustration or whatever, anxiety, tensions, getting rid of the mucus, you know, the traditional gagging and vomiting. And it's like, and then at a certain point, once I got clear, it was like I kind of entered into a, not to be weird, but sort of like a mind meld with the one consciousness, you know. And it was really weird because that's when I started understanding the power of like mudras and sutras, because it was like this weird sign language that I was communicating with. And it was like a sort of Morse code thing going on. It was really amazing. And it was like, and as everybody says, it was like a download. You're just getting downloaded this information and your personal stepped out the way and you were just like a recipient, you know. And that's how it is for the most part now. It's like, you know, the personal kind of steps out of the way at a breakthrough point, and you just are a vessel to just get downloaded this information. And it's just profound. So yeah, that happened about, well, I guess my first time was a breakthrough experience because you didn't experience it the first time. But I say about a year and a half later, when I kind of upped my dose and kind of honed in on a certain setting, was when I just, wow, you know.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And obviously a lot of this, you know, we're talking about breakthrough experiences, a lot of this goes towards spirituality. And so maybe real briefly here, we can also talk about briefly the, I forgot to mention this earlier, but the Detroit conference was at Pahrump Church. So we can speak a little bit about Pahrump Church and how your breakthrough or sort of spiritual consciousness experiences came together into this space.
Oh man. Yeah. So this is really profound because something that me and Kalindi, we would go on like group sojourns, and you know, it's just weird. Sometimes we'll be in the same room, sometimes it'll be on the phone, like, all right, I'm going in, you're going in. And we would often come back with this matching concept of like building a house. And it dealt like energetically with building a house. And then like as above, so below, it was really deep. And so there was a point in which we're doing this work, we kind of looked at each other like, yes, the house is built, like energetically. And so we had always had plans for like having a space for these type of work. And so going in moments of doubt, I mean, I wish, you know, I don't know how the time is, but I can just give you a really profound example with this like prop E work, if I can just go into it. You know, just knowing like the path forward. And so there was a situation which, as you know, Larry, we had a very skeleton team with this prop E. We were doing a lot of work. We were doing a lot of outreach. And
just real quick for everybody, Prop E is the voter resolution that passed in voter initiative that passed in Detroit. I think 61% voter approval or something like that. And this was in 2020, is that right? Or 2020?
Yes, 2020. Yeah. I think, and what was amazing about it was, no, was it 20? Okay, let me not get caught up.
Maybe in 2022, yeah.
Yeah, 2022, yeah. So what was amazing about it was that, one, We had the groundwork, but we needed to raise money, you know. And then I didn't have a clue of how we were going to help finance it. We had a little bit of money. And so I went and tapped in. I went to do that sacred sojourn. And it was just the weirdest thing, you know, spirit, ancestor, God, whatever, telling me what to do. And when I came out of it, it was literally 2 days later, I get a call from this guy. You know the story. He's a pretty well-heeled individual. He wanted an experience. We helped facilitate the experience. He was impacted by the experience so much that he decided to basically finance the ballot gathering campaign, you know, which that was our one weak point, was finance. And like out of nowhere, we were able to finance the successful campaign and pull it off. And even further, you know, like working with spirit, it was like, Some people in this work were bad actors, and I was unfortunate to look for the community. And so tapping in the source, you know, they were just like, it's handled. And those bad actors are no longer on the scene. And it's just, so that's how this work works. That's an example of, you know, going in and just finding like the breadcrumbs on the path, which way to follow. And it helps so much.
Yeah, I think that's such one of the lessons that I've learned throughout is like being really much more aware of synchronicities or moments and like these like opportunities to relate with what's happening externally. And we don't think we have any kind of interaction or we can't observe it, but all of a sudden things happen and you really can't just deny like, well, where did that even come from? Like this is literally what we're looking for. And so it's really great to hear stories like that that really tap into things that we've already learned from our experiences, but now we can pay attention to them more and not lose opportunities that come through.
Right, right. I mean, it's truly a magical experience, hence the word, right? Magical.
Right. Yeah. So Peronc is then going strong, and then it's going to be.
Oh.
Yeah.
Then I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm so excited. I don't mean to interject. yeah, Peronc Detroit is a anthogenic sanctuary. You know, we say church functionally, of course. We try to be a little bit more expansive than a traditional notion. It's in Detroit, Michigan. It'll be a place of education. It'll be a place of provision in which access will be, you know, there'll be access to, you know, sacraments. There'll be a place of advocacy in which it can be a space of meeting and learning. It's going to be a place of social connection in which we're going to foster community and events to foster community. And then finally, it's going to be a place of research, you know, with the lab and everything. So we want to try to ensure safety and a deeper understanding of these substances. So, yeah, it's going to be it's a really nice space. You've been there. Thank you for coming and blessing the space. And I encourage everybody to check it out. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And it sounds like you're saying there's research there. There's the sort of external like testing type research. But I'm guessing internal like exploration type research. How, you know, you talk a lot about citizen science over the many years. How do you see that happening here? And what do you see? What's your hope for something like citizen science in this realm?
Well, yeah, in particular, we have the lab, the HPLC testing lab that will test different species of mushrooms for their different potencies, cordyceps, lion's mane, psilocybe, based structures as well. That's one aspect. The other aspect is real, and that will provide laboratory grade research on potency, effectiveness, other constituents which make or help the biology of the person. So then also research in terms of really novel breakthroughs. And I don't know, it's a little touchy, but we could talk about it. Just novel breakthroughs in terms of personal development. So addiction, you know, turning around addiction, depression, and honing in as best we can with the research, you know, technologies we have and methodologies we have to like study and get real results and like have real like data about the results we get with like that interpersonal change on top of the mushrooms and everything else. So yeah, that's part of that citizen science. Also foraging, you know, we have some of the premier foragers, you know, that are part of our society, part of our institution, and teaching people how to identify fungal species, how to utilize them for beyond like functional construction-based, ecological-based mushrooms and other species of plants and things. And then also in regards of, identifying new species and also applying them. So like, how do you apply, can we do a small scale remediation project as a demonstration community model and get results? And, you know, can we create alternative styrofoam packaging from, you know, an oyster mushroom mold, you know, and showing small scale demonstrations and educating community on that as well. Yeah.
And it seems like what I always sort of, maybe I'm wrong about this, but it feels like from hearing you and Acacia and everyone else talk about, you know, and even Clindy talking about, you know, this place of consciousness that we go to. How do you engage citizen science for helping? Like, do you think that there's like a space that we go to and everyone has that area? You know, is there sort of a structure to it? Can we learn from each other through this type of citizen science as well? And how do we go about even sort of designing that type of thing?
Yeah, it's a really deep concept. And it's actually something that some of our most profound scientists have based like our modern technology on, whether you talk about macaroni, whether you talk about the use of microwave technology, infrared technology. It's an understanding that energy, and on a very fundamental physics level, that thought produces energetic waveforms. This is a very scientific, materialistic approach. These thought waveforms are impactful on our outer environment, in particular, the ionosphere, which, you know, holds these. And from that ionosphere, information can be pulled down. So we manipulate the microwave range, the infrared, and the radio range, but there are other ranges that science is very aware of that you could tap into what we call a collective consciousness. There used to be two schools of thought when it comes to knowledge. One is empiricist knowledge, in which we're familiar with, and one is inspirational knowledge, or Gnostic, or the Gnosis, in which the greatest thinkers of our times from all cultures oftentimes spoke of secret processes in which to tap a higher consciousness, in which the realm of human potential and thought existed, and that they would tap into for inspiration. So this is why, you know, amongst writers, absinthe was such a big deal, because it was considered to inspire the muse, as they called it, to open oneself up for those downloads of inspiration. The benzene ring of chemistry, the basis of organic chemistry, was discovered through this state, you know, the snake eating its own tail. So many of our greatest discoveries, if you look in the biographies of our greatest researchers and inventors and even change agents, whether we're talking about spiritual leaders, gurus, or scientists, or anything else, they will oftentimes, 9 times out of 10 in their bios, will talk about an inspirational dreamlike state, which propelled them to higher performance and a higher expansion. So it's something that's very real. It just hasn't been celebrated in the last, I guess, 100 or plus years. What we say post AMA, you know, that's no longer hip to consider the ability of human mind to tap into what we call this field of knowledge. In technical terms, we'll call it the cloud, for lack of a better word, which contains human thoughts, both past, present, and future, to be extrapolated. But not to get too deep into that. But yeah, tapping into those sacred processes, refining those processes, and using them effectively. So whatever particular craft you're part of, if you tap in, you will notice that you become more proficient in it. If you're a guitar player, you become more proficient. If you're an educator, architect. And so that's part of that process that goes on. And becoming more proficient with it is helps us become a better species in general.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. And so you tapped a little bit into a sort of collective unconscious and some of these other things that we see sort of beyond ourselves. What is your view in general? I know this is in 30 seconds or less.
No, I know.
But I mean, like, when you see this, like, how do you view this space beyond? Is this a spiritual realm? Is it a consciousness realm? Like, how do you interpret it? And what are the beings there? Is it imaginary, or this sort of intuitive sort of space you're speaking about a second ago? Or is there something like, is there reality to it? I know, you know, Clindy's had some great conversations with Luis Eduardo Luna, who spoke about ayahuasca experiences. He spoke about mushroom experience. We had him give a little conversation, a little dialogue about that. And it was so amazing to hear, you know, the space they're going to, and they're kind of some similar characters, and there's some similar themes. Like, what's your view of the space beyond ourselves?
Yeah, that there's, I guess, a 30 seconds or less, there's like a super energy. I got you. There's a super of energy that we exist in, and through consciousness, we're able to create structures and forms around the soups of energy, which come to sometimes exist in a corporeal form, but our ultimate form are energetic beings. And so our consciousness is what helps shape the flow and the shape and the structure and the function of this energy. and that we're all part of it. So in the sense that we're not separate from it, we're just separate from the understanding that we're existing in it at all time, like a fish not recognizing us in the water, you know? Yeah.
I had a conversation with somebody here recently, and she said she's kind of a sort of a Jungian framework, you know, kind of looking at archetypes and that type of thing. And she said that archetypes are the fruiting bodies of the collective unconscious. So basically, it's the structure, the form that comes from this sort of mycelial network of collective unconscious that creates the thing that we see or that we interact with or that we participate with. You know?
Yeah. And I used to do a present. I still do a workshop on creating a new human archetype, because that's very possible. You know, mm-hmm. we have these archetypes that exist in the world. We have, you know, the hero. We have the so-called bully. We have the, you know, the gallant or the popular, you know, all these different themes, archetypes, and that we can create new archetypes, which it can be more, let's say, God body oriented. So that's part of this work, too, is tapping in, shaping our psychology, shaping our DNA expression, shaping our energetic expression to become a new archetype, a new expression of what it means to be human. Or
what do you see as being the archetype of the, like, we're kind of in a space right now where things are a little bit uncertain. What's the archetype you think will emerge from this environment that we're in?
I think there's going to be a reemergence, and not to use overused terms, a reemergence of the sacred feminine, divine feminine, who may seem to be a little overlooked and neglected in these days and times. And then also the divine masculine one, which stands on principles outside of like selfish reasonings. And so I see those energies coming to influence people in subtle ways, and it'll manifest in society in the forms of movements, in the forms of new approaches to things, for lack of a better word. And so it's also going to cause that there are a lot of people who are going to have to grow up really fast, because, you know, I guess I think their understanding of what's going on is a little immature. And so once the like ramifications of some decisions are felt, there's going to be a rush toward a deeper understanding and a deeper maturity. And that's why we work for this access, right? That's why we work to make sure people have access, because they're going to be people more than anything, more than the gas prices and interest rates and border. There's going to be people worried about really what the fuck is going on internally and externally. You know.
All right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think about that a lot in terms of, like, you know, we talk a lot about the mental health stuff as you know, or, you know, that's the conversation out there in terms of psychedelics and entheogens. But I think what you're saying, realizing like there's so much more, tapping into like what the fuck's going on, really understanding or getting a better conceptualization of nature of reality, nature of consciousness, all these other types of things. I think that's what is really unique about what we're doing here. You know, all that other stuff. Well, this is an opportunity for people to realize that there's just so much more. And so,
yeah. You know, and not to infer one way or the other, you know, I have my personal feelings. We all do. But ultimately, what we're understanding is that this governing structure of human oppression or spirit oppression is starting to weaken. And sometimes things look strongest when they're about to fall. So simultaneously, you see this expansion of human consciousness. So, you know, grab your popcorn. Things will get interesting.
Right. Sure, right. Okay, got two more questions, and then we'll wrap it up here. So thank you very much for your time here. What is one teaching from either Kalindi or the Detroit community? I know the Tamarian Institute is also a big part of your life. I don't know if you touch on that as well, in terms of the, you mentioned that earlier about the martial arts aspect as well. What's one teaching from that broad spectrum of things in Detroit, whether it's Kalindi or the Tamarian Institute or other work that's going on out there, that still resonates strongly with you today in terms of something that you're always, it always is like a mantra for you almost?
Oh man, this is something that I was taught many years ago. It was always that we are collectively responsible for each other's greatness. In other words, part of my obligation to you as a friend and, you know, is to help you realize your greatest potentials. And sometimes they're in a blind spot, and it's my job to help point them out to you and support that growth. And as we do that, we become our own greatest hero, Yeah, we owe it. We salute each other by pulling the greatness out in each other, you know, and by supporting the greatness in each other. So whenever there's some shortcoming that we may see in each other, the response should always be to try to like emphasize the best parts of them, to call the hero out, you know, whether verbally or through interaction. So.
Yeah, it's so important right now too, especially empowering people in the state of collapse or a state of shift is a good way to empower people and can see as things are breaking away, what is the true potential here? What are the things that I can move forward with? So yeah, that's really, really great lesson. Okay, well, one last question I'm going to try. This is going to be for everyone for the future podcast. You're the first guest here. So for future podcasts, when you do guests as well, we're going to all ask this question, which is, what do the words outside of the organization, just when you hear the words, what do the words decriminalize nature mean to you? Yes.
Oh, wow. That means to not arrest nature. You know, that means to not limit its potential to benefit our lives, to be of its fullest potential, not to arrest it. And we are part of nature as human beings, but not to arrest the plants, not to arrest the flora, the fauna, the water, not to arrest ourselves and nature within ourselves, and to decriminalize what is considered taboo in a modern material world. So how do we decriminalize the idea of authentic expression, or how do we decriminalize the idea of equitable human care and concern, you know? And so that's the thing we seek to liberate. But first we work toward the spirit, which will liberate, what do you say, free your mind, your ass will follow. So
awesome. Well, thank you very much for this amazing conversation today, Mudu. I don't know if there's any last things you want to talk about or plug before we end up here, but the floor is open for you.
Yeah, just want to encourage everybody to be a part of this decrim movement, organize your community, tune into our site and our podcast. Also, please check out PERONC Detroit website. If anyone's interested in contacting me directly, I can be reached at Mudubaki, MUDOUBAQUI, on the Instagram. And other than that, hey, let's do this thing.
Thank you very much, Mudu. Really appreciate it. Thank you, Rachel, for helping us out in the background there. And we look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, everybody. Have a wonderful evening and keep growing the movement. Plant power to the people. Plant power to the people. Where you dream is where I'll meet you.